meditate. Let's meditate. Let's take this energy of the meditation, okay? Take a deep breath in. Ooh, as you exhale, feel the weight of your body grounding into this moment. Let go of any tension you might be carrying. Just allow yourself to settle into a state of calm. Just allow the rhythm of your breath to slow and steady, drawing you into a peaceful presence. Now imagine yourself standing in the stillness of a quiet, tranquil space. It might be a garden, a peaceful forest, by the side of a calm river. Just picture the beauty surrounding you wherever you are. The colors, the sounds, the air. This is your sanctuary of peace where nothing exists except the present moment. And for a moment, reflect on the words and the wisdom of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., whose life was one of service, of love, of profound understanding. His words remind us that life is not always easy, but each step, no matter how difficult, is part of a greater journey. There are no mistakes in life, only lessons waiting to be discovered. Every challenge you have ever faced, every choice you've ever made has brought you closer to wisdom and understanding. In this now moment, imagine the lessons you have learned on your journey. Picture them as stepping stones leading you to a deeper sense of peace and purpose. The struggles, the victories, the times you stumbled, they have all shaped you who you are today. And there is no need to regret or fear. Every experience holds and contains the seeds of growth. Just take a moment to silently say to yourself, I trust the lessons life brings me. I trust that each moment holds wisdom and I am open to learning. Allow these words to settle deep within you, letting them guide your spirit towards peace. And as you continue to breathe deeply and calmly, feel the gentle reminder of Dr. King's message. We must accept finite disappointment, but never lose infinite hope, no matter the difficulty. You are never alone. You are always growing. Let this thought linger. Let this truth linger, and with each breath, allow your heart to be filled to overflowing with gratitude for the lessons of your life. Trust that the journey ahead will continue to unfold with wisdom, with grace. Take just a moment in the silence in your sanctuary of peace. carry with you the sense of peace that you have called forth and created, the understanding, and for all the lessons learned. They say there's a universal
Robert Yarnell made it here to dance. Hallelujah. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
just living in another place, in another dimension. Robert, I'm so glad you're here today. Thank you for saying yes.
It is great to be here. And this is my first time in this particular space, so
yeah.
Delight.
Yeah.
I'm already moved. Martin Luther King Day is a very special holiday to me. Some of you know I grew up more Quaker than anything else. And so he was always kind of a hero in our household. King very much believed that the ministry was not something we just did on a Sunday or in a book group, that it was something we brought into the world, right? That the Christ in us is manifested in and as us and in the world, and that Christianity is about reaching across lines. So it's not just about me, it's about all of us. And so that wisdom is huge. My talk title today, The Wisdom of the Ages, originally I came up with that because, as some of you know, I just hit a milestone age myself, which is 60. And that was on December 1st. I did a big show, a few of you were there, up in Poughkeepsie, New York, and shared some wisdom there that I'll expound upon here. I did some songs there that I won't be doing here today. But it's a chance for me to look back at what are some of the wisdom, some of the things that I've gleaned over the years, and to share that, to spiritual lessons, if you will. Because I think one of the things that as we get older, one of the things that our society does still seem to value in aging is wisdom. But it's one of the few things that we seem to value in this culture with aging. We have a definite problem with that. And the book that Oprah just picked as her first ever second book to be in her official book club, A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. In that book, Eckhart Tolle says, quote, "In our civilization, which is totally identified with the outer and ignorant of the inner dimension of spirit, the word old has mainly negative connotations. It equals useless, and so we regard it as almost an insult to refer to someone as old. To avoid the word, we use euphemisms such as elderly and senior. The First Nation's grandmother is a figure of great dignity. Today's granny is at best cute. Why is old considered useless? Because in old age, the emphasis shifts from doing to being. And our civilization, which is lost in doing, knows nothing of being. It asks, being, what do you do with it?" End quote. Now, I like that a lot. As we age, our physical selves retreat a bit, and our inner light shines all the more if we cooperate with that process. Now, we probably have all had elders in our lives who are examples of being for us. I know I have, going all the way back. But I have to say, in my case, that the one who actually demonstrated being to me and brought it into my life in a visceral way was a black lab mix named Blazer, who left the planet in 2019. While he was here, he taught me all about being. His presence filled my life, seeing me through highs and lows, breakups and deaths, new dates, a relationship, everything. And although some people think being is all about lotus flowers and calm, he taught me that being contains pure embodied joy, which he didn't read about in a book, or a workshop, or work on with a therapist. So he arrived with it, fully formed and always ready to go. For example, let's cycle through these Blazer pictures before I continue. I think that's the last one for now. So he had that pure embodied joy, which I learned a lot from. And just to give you an example of how it was always ready to go at any moment, I'd like to describe what happened every single time that he heard the word W-A-L-K, or walk. First that, then he was so full of energy that he would sprint down our hallway, back and forth, back and forth, then crossing back and forth, rounding circles. Eventually he'd pick up a rope, shake it, throw it against the wall, finally running back up to me. By this point, he had the harness ready to go. He saw the harness, now it's real. Oh my God, another celebration. He'd get to the door, he'd open it, he'd come, we were living in a 6-foot walk up in the Hell's Kitchen, let go of the leash, watch him go all the way down in like 3 seconds, be waiting at the front door. So he did that every time for 11 years. As if World War II was ending and everyone's coming home safe and sound, ticker tape parade. Can you imagine? Well, I didn't have to. And what I learned from that is that we must celebrate the little joys in life, even if the celebration delays the thing itself, which it did. But without the celebration, there's less of everything. We have to exercise our gratitude and even embody that as celebration, and that makes every small detail bigger and better. It could be the same exact walk every day. Who cares? It's the best walk ever. Yes. He also had a presence, that quality of being that is just pure presence. If you're sad, it doesn't try to fix you, it just knows how to be with you. Who has a pet or an animal and knows what I'm talking about? They just know how to be with you. Eckhart Tolle, in fact, calls pets guardians of being. I love that. That feels accurate to me. I think they make us better. When I thought we were doing nothing, and I'd get up from the couch, he'd look at me like, where are you going? We were having such a great time. He also taught me about a healthy balance of willpower and surrender. So if we were out on a walk and I needed to get home and go this way, but he wanted to go that way, he would let me know in no uncertain terms. But eventually, pull him this way, he would shake it off, and now he's happy to go this way. Every time. There was no resentment, there was no story, he never lets me go where I want. Because this was the new reality. What's up this way? That's exciting too. If it was hot out, he would simply lie down and stop walking. Can we go? No, we can't go. He'd be happy, just looking around. I'll let you know when I'm ready. And when he was ready, he'd let me know. Yeah. Same thing with the little piece of salt in the winter, before I knew about the booties. And I looked down and it turns out he's just been walking on 3 legs for the last few steps, and I didn't know. Because he wasn't whining, he wasn't making noise. Cleaned up, now I have 4 legs again. There was no story. Pain is part of life, but suffering is something that we create consciously and unconsciously. And I think it ties into the unity third principle, that we create the experience of our lives. We may not create all the facts, but the experience of it, the story we tell, is something we create. And I think Blazer truly had life and had it abundantly. Jesus said he came that our joy may be complete, and I feel like Blazer pointed the way to that for me. And let me just say, I'm not alone in feeling this way. In his book, The Universal Christ, Father Richard Rohr says that his black lab Venus was also the Christ for him. It's right there in the dedication of the book. Now, in unity, what do we mean by Christ? Well, Christ is not a person. It's not the same thing as Jesus. Christ is that energy in us, that highest vibration that we are one with, and that we believe Jesus identified so completely with and as that we started to know him as Jesus the Christ. He remembered that all the time. And remember, Jesus said we had to be like children to get into the kingdom of heaven, which is a place everybody wanted to get into back then, desperately. So he used that desire to steer people away from the military conquest they thought we were going to, toward something peaceful, toward an inner state. That was radical. But when he said you have to be like a child, he didn't mean be childish. He meant the mind of a child, the spirit of a child. And I think many of us have cats and dogs know what that means. That that can provide a freshness, free of the human ego's distortion field, to see and experience the joy of life. So we have these portals into the spiritual realm, the realm of full living. They might be pets, children, nature, the arts. And each of us can find what these are for us, and that's a vital part of our spiritual practice, so that we're experiencing life as a holy and joyful experience. Not always happy, mind you. Joy is deeper. But let's pause here to ask, what is the Jesus way? Well, he boiled it down for us on a number of occasions. One of them is Matthew 22, verses 37 to 40. And in case you've forgotten, I have it right here. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment, and a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. That's pretty lovely. First, if we're going to look at this, we of course have to understand what we mean by the word God. Paul Tillich said God is the ground of being. In unity, God, of course, is a presence, a force, the one power, the only power. We say that God is love itself, not loving, not compassionate, but compassion itself. So God is this energy, this power, bigger than anything we can understand. In fact, I love that phrase. It's fairly modern, I think, higher power, right? The higher power. And I like that because it can be higher than anything I've conceived of before. So my idea, my understanding of God gets higher and higher. It's higher than our ego selves, certainly. And it's also something that's at a very high vibration. So it's literally a higher power. But most important, I think, is that God is not an idea to debate, right? It's a living experience, a relationship, something that feels connected to our full self, our highest self. And so I think this part of the Bible that Jesus is saying, he's saying devote yourself to this highest principle with all your heart, soul, and mind. In other words, with all of you. So is our heart in alignment with and devoted to this? Our feelings and inclinations, are they in alignment with the God of our understanding? Is our mind in alignment? Our thoughts and beliefs, are we using our mind as an instrument of love, loving God with all our mind? And there's that middle one, soul. Well, I love the translation that's called The Message. In The Message, he substitutes the word prayer here. And I like that. I might broaden that to our spiritual practice. Is my spiritual practice in alignment with the God of my understanding? And if not, how might I line that up more? What might I do? And each of us can know that. Coming here is certainly part of it for me, and I think for all of us. And then, once we got that whole thing down, there's that second part. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Once we do the first, bringing our entire being into alignment with God, with our highest power of good and love, once we're at least occasionally conscious of that process, that loving, I think, comes more naturally. I've heard some people have said that they have a problem with love your neighbor as you love yourself, because so many of us don't love ourselves. So some people prefer the section of Matthew 25, where Jesus says to treat everyone, especially those we think are lower than us, to treat everyone the way we would treat him, the way we would treat Jesus. In fact, he says that is the only test for who gets into the kingdom. That is a tall order, and not something I hear about a lot from the pulpit. But going back to this earlier point, what does it mean to love ourselves? If it's the model for loving your neighbor, I think it's an important consideration. Well, loving ourselves is not the same as self-indulgence. Just as loving a child doesn't mean giving them candy or a trip to Disneyland every single time they want one. It's about loving our inner essence, as well as our humanity. The Christ self and the sometimes stumbling and bumbling self that wants to make a great impression, but so often falls short or thinks it does. Early in Unity especially, we use affirmations to reprogram our minds away from the thought that we are evil sinners or just somehow inherently flawed and bad. And the way the ego works is it makes everything a problem to solve, including us. It lives on problems and conflicts because that's actually its job. It's not living from a place of inherent perfection and beauty. That is actually the Christ in us. Where are we today? The Christ self or the ego self? We live in a culture of the ego, so it takes a lot of work to learn true self-love. When I was asked in seminary, One Spirit, where many of us went, they asked, what one piece of advice would you give in a single sentence, if you could only give one piece of advice? I thought about it for a long time and finally came up with the following. Learn to speak kindly to yourself. And that has changed my life radically. There is now a compassion within me that was not there before when I make a mistake. There is a humor. I don't take myself as seriously as I used to. During or sometimes after an error, something that has led me astray, I catch it. I bounce back faster, and there's a kindness in me that's present now, even if it's sometimes delayed. It's a different me inside. In Unity, I began to take responsibility for my little part of the universe. Because blame puts the power out there. I've heard it said that if other people are the problem, there is no solution. It's always about starting with my part of the solution and keying into that, because that's where our power is, on our own part. And a lot of that is about perspective. Within us and around us, we are blessed in ways we cannot even know. And we spend so much time and energy resisting our lives, telling ourselves a story that says, this should not be happening. That should not have happened. But listen to these words of Rumi from 800 years ago. This being human is a guest house, every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. I think that's great. We resist and resent so much of our lives, making up stories about what things mean. But a lot of the awful stuff is what got us to the stuff that we love. I realized a while back that most of the true pleasures of my life trace back to a really tough breakup in the 90s and all the personal growth that I sought out because of that pain. If I'd stayed in the relationship instead of walking the painful path of a breakup, I would literally not be here today, would not have most of the blessings of my life, Unity, Blazer, Joseph, our house, our new community, my ministry, my artistic journey, and I would not know literally a single one of you. So there's no sense in playing Jenga with our lives, imagining if we took out just that one thing, the whole structure would be so much better. No, the whole thing could come crashing down, as it does in that game. And that's often true of the present as well, when we resist and resent our present circumstances. And so I'm not saying accept everything in your current life and make the best of it, or love every detail of your past, no matter what happened. But what I'm really saying here is, let's watch the story. Let's watch the assumptions and resentments. Then choose from a place of peace if a change is needed. And if it feels like your Jenga set just collapsed, remember Rumi. The universe may be clearing the way for some wonderful new creation. We don't know. And that may be true of our world as well. If you're not happy with the state of the world, note that. Feel the feelings. And see if you're led to any positive, peaceful, and productive actions in keeping with what we learn here, loving our neighbors and even our enemies. Watch the story detach a bit from everyone else's story about it. Again, feel sad for a bit if needed. I do let myself feel sad if my personal life isn't going the way I want it. I also let myself feel sad from time to time about world events. But at some point, sooner than I used to, I come in with a higher voice. If I silence the frightened voice too soon, it's like telling a frightened child to shut up. We need self-compassion to be the loving parent. Like we do as prayer chaplains, we start by acknowledging where we are before redirecting toward a higher view. So there's a self-compassion in me now, 60 years in. I've even approached loving my enemies, which I begin starts with those enemies inside me, those parts of myself I've disowned and disavowed. As I've come to peace with those parts, I've been less likely to react to others who have those qualities and more able to be at choice to respond rather than react. Then it becomes natural to love others because I'm already loving those tricky parts of me that are out in the world. We are all one. We call this unity, right? And so we move from the first person singular to plural, from I to we. And if there's too much I, then I just get lost in my ego story. Me, me, me. If there's too much you, I'm off on your issues, trying to fix you. Like you're a problem that needs fixing, or maybe you become my next higher power. But when there's a balance, which I think we learn to feel, then we have a strong, spiritually centered self, feeling love, radiating it, wanting to share it, loving our neighbor while we love ourselves, loving our neighbor as we love ourselves. And that's the way we learn here. I think it's what Jesus wanted and demonstrated and what the world craves. So why not be that world? Let me conclude with this final piece of wisdom. Our unity retreats culminate in a walk with God. And really, that's just a conscious version of what we're doing all the time, walking with God, God in us and around us. So let us take inspiration from Guru Blazer today and every day. And let's know that this is the best walk ever. Thank you.
Guardians of being. Thank you. watch you with a grin, the kind of eyes that welcome you. You always saw walking, a tender glance you simply can't refuse. At times like this, a guy could use a dog. He listens when you tell him things. There's nothing you can't say. And unlike certain people, you can teach him how to stay. And if the world is giving you the blues, he cheers you up by cheering on the news. It's things like that that make you choose a dog. Other people need romance, dancing, playing around. Other people need constant fun. Well, I'm not one. I have my feet on the ground. Give me a quiet night, a glass of wine, a tuna melt on rye, a simple walk together underneath the starry sky. And suddenly the night is something rare, and all because there's someone special there who's gazing at the views, her head upon your shoes. At times like this, I sure could use a dog.